No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time to discuss the offense from that Miami game. All I can say is it's nice to have it all back for a game at least. And joining me to discuss it is Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Great to be back and talking about a good performance by the Ravens offense.
Yeah, it's been a few months. We think the last time you were on was for the Expectations series. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you know, Josh is probably on the show 4 or 5 times a year for various shows. But it's great to see you again, my friend, and representing Alaska. Well, we're recording this at 2 a.m. on actually. It's 1 a.m. again because the clocks just got moved back, didn't they?
Oh, is it daylight?
Just got moved back. Yeah, I just looked at this and it's 1 a.m. again. So we're starting at 2 a.m., but it's now 1 a.m. So, okay. I'm not as tired all of a sudden.
My phone still says 10:01. So maybe still catching up in Alaska.
It'll be 2 a.m. your time that'll flip back to 1.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's exactly what we're doing here. So we have a rare 3-hour difference here, a little bit of an anomaly between East Coast and Alaska time. All right. So anyway, back to the Ravens game here, and I guess we'll talk about the trade that happened today first, just to set this up. Jair Alexander traded to the Eagles. The Ravens get a 2026 number 6 pick. The Eagles get a 2027 number 7 pick in return. So pretty much a 6th-round pick in 26 is the total value of this trade.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of saw this one coming a mile away. Wasn't sure what the compensation was going to be, but the fact that the dude hadn't cracked the lineup unless the Ravens were in desperate need of a cornerback just kind of tells it all. You know, he was behind TJ Champa and Chidobe Awuzie. Tampa obviously brings more value on special teams. I think he made the play of special teams in this past game. But yeah.
He's actually behind Keon Martin. And you want to throw another player in there that he's behind and that actually needs a roster spot right now? Keandre Jackson.
I love Keandre Jackson, man.
Yeah, he's played pretty well on special teams. And I think, you know, the Ravens save $1 million in cap. He's traded at the midway point on exactly a $2 million salary. So it's $1 million cap savings. But as you know, they don't be able to harvest all that because they have to pay somebody else for that roster spot effectively. So they're going to have to put some money into that. It might be somebody they elevate from the practice squad like Keandre Jackson. It might be somebody they trade for before Tuesday that effectively takes that spot. They're still very short on outside linebackers, for example, so we may still see action on that front.
Yeah, if they don't sign Keandre Jackson to the 53, I think somebody's definitely going to poach him. I mean, dude's put great film out there 3 games in a row now, and they just got them playing on primetime where he made 2 solo tackles on kickoff return. Kickoff return and then punt return. And then he downed that punt by Jordan Stout at the 4-yard line. So people are watching and that's a guy who's definitely generating some buzz right now.
Yeah. Exciting. Certainly a guy who can help a lot of teams in terms of special teams. I think the reason that the Ravens would actually keep him is if he's ahead of Sanusi Kane on the safety depth chart, which does appear to be the case right now. Kind of weird that Sanusi Kane was inactive and Keandre Jackson was elevated for the
two games in a row. He was inactive. And that kind of like spoke volumes to me. I was like, oh wow, like that might be telling of something that we, you know, of the guy's roster spot might be in jeopardy at this point because Keandre is just playing too good not to be on the 53 right now.
Yeah, I think that could be true, and I think it might be that Kane is cut at some point coming up here. I don't think they trust him to play the back end, or I don't think they would have done this with Keandre Jackson. And, you know, coming into the year, Kane was a guy who, you know, 85% of his expected value was on special teams, probably, to just pick a number out of there. And that just hasn't been true. He hasn't really been worthy of a C patch on special teams. We thought, maybe he could be a leader, at least by example, even if he's not going to take it away from players like Tylan Wallace or Jake Hummel. But he's certainly a guy who a core multi-unit special teams player. And it just now that not being able to crack the game day roster is a big negative.
Yeah.
All right. We'll have some more discussion of this signing on Friday morning GM, which we're having a special episode of that I believe is going to release on Monday, that will talk about who are some players the Ravens can pick up to make the 50, sorry, to help them defensively, primarily, I think, take the next step. I think offensively, they have most of the players they're going to get. There may be a market for a guard out there, somebody who a team is willing to trade that the Ravens want. But what do you want to see happen, Josh?
I honestly think they're like one or two defensive pieces away from being really, really formidable on that side of the ball. I mean, I love playing Kyle Hamilton all over the place, but I just don't want him to have to be our pretty much de facto best outside linebacker for the majority of his snaps, you know? Just seeing his leg get whipped like that the other night, and I was like, oh, man, if he's going to be down there in the trenches. I like him being close to the line of scrimmage, but I don't like him having pretty much be our Sam full-time. So I'd like them to be able to fill that role with another somebody who's, you know, more naturally suited for that role. And then also just another defensive lineman, preferably a three tech, somebody who can generate some interior pass rush. Because as valiant as John Dickens' efforts have been, and Travis Jones is coming off two really good games, you need more from that position. I mean, there are still times where, you know, we're giving opposing quarterbacks, you know, that perfect kind of pocket sometimes that kind of deliver the ball.
Yeah, I like what I've seen from Travis Jones as a pass rusher from the three tech spot in particular these last couple of games. And and also, honestly, from the he's been fine from the zero as well, or zero or one. But when he plays one, he's a guy who will automatically generate a double team on the inside, given who the Ravens personnel around him is right now. The only way they've been able to get him singled up is by using sim pressure schemes, which put additional stress on the defense in terms of dropping back into zone coverage. And if you're against good quarterbacks, they'll read hot and they'll get that ball out and have that player who's dropping at a tremendous disadvantage. So you're daring him to throw hot, and then you drop out of it to not let your player be able to cover that route usually.
Yeah. So that's my thing. Like given the Ravens schedule right now, like the kind of quarterbacks they're going to be facing on the back end, you're not too terribly worried about, you know, them being able to read hot and find those quick answers and stuff like that. Maybe Aaron Rodgers and you know, Drake May and Jordan Love later down the road. But for the most part, you're going to get some young quarterback, JJ McCarthy, Dylan Gabriel, or Shedeur Sanders. You never know. You're going to get a lot of young and experienced quarterbacks who might be able to find those hot reads and stuff like that. But I want to be able to consistently generate more pressure with just four, or maybe five at the most, without having to send the house and always sim all the time. Because eventually, I mean, we saw in the Chicago game that, you know, the Bears were kind of, you know, catching on to some of the manufactured pressure stuff the Ravens were doing with screens. And if it wasn't for Roquan Smith, great open field tackling in Miami, they might have broke a couple of that in that game too, especially in the first half.
Yeah, Roquan's certainly looked great in these two wins, which has been. But let's turn it back to the offense here. I always say there's really no small wins in the NFL, but this is a road Thursday game. Those are two very tough factors, even playing a lousy Dolphins team. Everybody who's a naysayer, everybody just who dislikes the Ravens is going to say, oh, you got to beat somebody better than Miami. Well, no, they won a road Thursday game. This is a hard thing to do in the NFL. It's a legitimately difficult thing. And not only did they do it, they beat the living snot out of Miami in so doing it. It's an impressive, legitimately impressive win, even versus one of the bottom tier teams in the NFL, which the Dolphins probably are not quite as – they're not as bad as their record, period, because I don't think any NFL team is. But they're not as bad as their record given the personnel they have. I think they're actually a little better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what pisses me off about some of these, talk shouty shows, right? It's like, oh, the temporary expectations here, just the Dolphins. Look, the Dolphins were playing damn inspired football, especially on defense in that first half. I mean, they were rallying. They were, guys were holding on to dear life for Derrick Henry's legs. So you got to give them credit. Like this is the NFL. This isn't college football where you got Mercer going against Alabama. Okay. These are professional athletes with families to feed. And sometimes they're going to play with some pride and play with some intensity, especially at home on a short week. Prime time, this they're fighting for their season just like the Ravens are fighting for their season. For people to think that the Dolphins are just going to come out and lay down in Lamar Jackson's homecoming was ridiculous. So you need to give the Ravens credit for beating the team that they're supposed to beat and doing it handedly.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way on that. They ran the ball effectively in this game, which I thought was really good. And I thought more importantly, they ran the ball even when they were closing out the game very effectively. So they had, the last 10 plays to kill off the last 6:30. I'm watching the line play primarily during that time, just to see what's going on. And then, of course, we got another chance to watch it when we got home. So there was a fair amount of brother-in-law play on that final drive. There's some guys who were basically agreeing not to get hurt, on some plays. Not a real high intensity across the whole offensive line, but the Ravens, took advantage of that fact, rolled right down the field, and the Dolphins didn't have anything to say about it for the last 6:30. It's also nice that the coaches on both sides kind of realize what's going on. Neither of them is trying to either run up the score or call timeouts in that situation. So the Dolphins, they could have called timeouts. They had won anyway after the 2-minute warning, I think. And if they had called that, then that might have possibly given them another possession. And I don't know if you remember back that 2019 game, the coach at that point, was it Flores or who was the coach?
It was Flores. Flores. Yeah.
He called a timeout late in that game in a 59-10 game to try and get the Dolphins another possession. It's like punishment for that.
Yeah, no, it made no sense.
All right. Didn't see Lamar on a bunch of design runs in this game, which I thought is probably a good thing. It wouldn't surprise me if the rest of the season we see a greatly reduced run role for Jackson. But he still, no doubt about it, he got a big run in the game, the big first down run scramble. They have to show a minimum amount of willingness to use him to make the mess point still the dangerous thing it is.
You got to keep the defense honest. Because you see, even the first time Lamar ran it, even though he kept it, he wasn't really like committing to the run. He kind of like backed into the line of scrimmage, like, you got me.
this win, all of a sudden, the Ravens are catapulted back into very significant favorites to win the AFC North. Not like barely odds on favorites like they were a week ago, but now. A dollar wagered returns $1.69 on the Ravens. It returns $3 on the Steelers, $11 on the Bengals, and $56 on the Browns. So Marylanders know horse racing. Not usually, these are $1 tickets, not $2 tickets you're buying and what they'd return. But that is a very significant favorite position for the Ravens. They're about 57% by implied odds what their chance to win the division is right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even just like looking at the schedule alone. It's just like how this team is playing. I mean, they're playing complimentary football, both sides of the ball, all three phases. Got Jordan Stout, the elite punting weapon right now, field flipper. And it's just the fact that if you look at the upcoming schedule in conjunction with how the Ravens are playing in all three phases right now, and then contrast that to how the Bengals are playing, how the Steelers are playing, and how the Browns are playing, how can you not be more confident in the Ravens? And then look at who the Steelers have. The Steelers have some of the most highly efficient offenses in the league. They're going up against in like back-to-back-to-back weeks, right? Like starting with the Colts. I mean, the Colts are putting up historic, almost like 2019 Ravens numbers as far as their efficiency on offense. So they got that to deal with, and they're kind of in disarray in on their defense in particular. So I'm very confident.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen some of the graphics out there, and there's not a big denominator on this. Okay, so it's a low sample size, but Tomlin has 0 times out of I think 5 in some narrow set of he should have gone for it on fourth down. Has he done it? 0 times out of 5, and Harbaugh is like 4 out of 7, which is not super high. Mm-hmm. But it's also not a lot of times. And there can be reasons why somebody's 1 or 2 lower even than you would expect for this point in the season. but they have 0 times he got fired. I mean, this is just kind of reinforces a narrative about Tomlin that's been true for a long time. He's about the most cowardly offensive coach in the league in terms of his willingness to go for it on fourth down. So great leader of men, very eloquent, absolutely terrible game manager.
Yeah. And it's funny because he actually has the most trustworthy offense he's had since Big Ben in like 2021, maybe. It's crazy. You got the most trustworthy offense you've had and the least trustworthy defense, but you'd rather trust your defense. Can't stop a nosebleed right now and not put the fate of your team in the hands of your future Hall of Fame quarterback, albeit 40 plus years old.
Now, why wouldn't they want to put the fate of their team in the hands of their middle linebacker who can't tackle? That's it.
Him too.
All right. Let's move on. So turning point in this game for me anyway was the forced fumble and fumble recovery by Gilman, who had a terrible game, by the way, missing tackles. Just an awful game. Gave up, I think it was 42 yards of additional yardage after missed tackles. Okay.
Yeah.
But I trade that every time for a fumble, forced fumble and fumble recovery that sets you up at the 7-yard line. Make that trade every time.
I almost threw my phone at the TV when he whiffed on that 28-yard reception to the receiver. I was, God damn it! You know what?
Yeah.
If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have got the momentum on the first quarter. So look, all is forgiven, my guy.
The funny thing is, he actually missed the tackle on the fumble play. He overran the play, and then he had to come back and get in it, and then he punched.
Teddy Buchanan to the rescue.
Yeah, exactly. Teddy Buchanan twice in this game was making the tackle while a second man stripped the ball. That was really sweet.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on here. Certainly, we're not highly efficient in that first half. The Ravens only had 4 first downs. And I think the drive length really says more than anything. They had 3 plays, 4 plays, 7 plays, 3 plays, 3 plays, 3 plays. That 4-play drive, they got in on 4th-and-2. And I don't know if the game would have really turned out differently if they hadn't, but I know that would have been a really bad thing had the Ravens not scored from the 7-yard line and gone for it on 4th-and-2 there.
Yeah. Honestly, the first half really, like, I attributed a lot of it to the Lamar rush, you know, like short hopping it to Rashad Bateman on that first drive. But it kind of reminded me how the Ravens offense looked to start the season, where you couldn't really sustain drives. Everything kind of felt like you, in situation of football, it's like pulling teeth. They were either coming up short or just, you know, not being able to impose the real like they wanted to. It was just, like, I was like, man, like going into halftime, I was like, dude, they're kind of lucky to be up right now. And then if they don't come out and show me something on this first drive of the second half, I don't know how much confidence they're going to have in this team. And then they almost doubled their first downs on that first drive than they had in the entire first half. They had, like, I know at one point Kirk Herbstreit was saying, like, they've already eclipsed what they had in the first half and, like, that first drive coming out of halftime. But, yeah, I was highly encouraged by what I saw in the second half and was glad they shook off the rust.
Yeah, so they had 4 first downs in the first half and 6 on the first drive of quarter 3. And they owned that third quarter. They really dominated them. Even the fourth quarter was not as one-sided. They give up the ball a couple times, but they owned the third quarter, that's for sure, and put away the game in the fourth quarter with some decent running after that. Good night for the offensive line, I thought. I mean, if you go across the board, the grades all worked out pretty well. We'll go into the grades in the second part of the show, but there weren't any penalties on the offensive line, and there weren't any sacks that were the responsibility of the offensive line. Those two things will usually mean scores are pretty good because you don't have a lot of big negative plays. They really didn't give up all that many pressures in the game. Stanley gave up a few, but really they didn't give up a lot of total pressures in this game. So we're going to see the grades are good. And two players in particular really scored well, just to whet your appetite a little bit for part two here.
Yeah, I was pleased by what I saw from the offensive line. They were still a little, like, I wouldn't say skittish Lamar, but like holding on to the ball a little bit too long. Like there's sometimes either like throw it away or just like maybe run up to the pocket and gain a few yards outside, you know, past the line of scrimmage kind of thing. But that's just the living take we take with Lamar. So
yeah, generally speaking, I'd say Lamar's judgment on such decisions, we either run, take a short sack, you know, pass the ball. Lamar's judgment on those situations to extend plays is outrageously good.
Yeah.
So you take a few extra sacks because of it. What else we got to say? Second consecutive opponent that had injuries in the secondary, a cornerback in particular. The Bears were really banged up there. Mm-hmm. Dolphins in a little bit better shape, but they're still playing a lot of unproven guys. I don't know. Did Rasul Douglas get hurt in the game? Because he only ended up playing 36 snaps. I was a little surprised by that.
I didn't see anything like from the sideline reporter saying that, you know, he was out. I know that, who was it that went out? They had Trap Robinson went out, didn't come back, and then they had another person go out and didn't come back on, I want to say, in the front seven, but I don't remember if it was if Rasul Douglas. I know he made that one tackle on Derrick Henry, kind of hanging off for dear life, that shoestring tackle in the first half. But I don't know. Maybe that was the play that knocked some screws loose for him. Who knows?
Yeah, he ended up playing 36 snaps, so I think he must have played into the second half, obviously. But anyway, I thought Monken has done a good job in each of these last two games, not going so heavy and not making so many concessions to try and run the ball effectively that they have not been able to take advantage of very weak secondaries each week. So they've still kind of gone after these teams. And Lamar only threw the ball 25 times. He dropped back and it resulted in a pass or sack, which is not a lot, but it was very effective in this game against Miami. The main problem was they just were not particularly efficient on obvious situational, you know, first down opportunities. And that's where they didn't have a terrible rate of first downs collected, but they just didn't have a bunch of long drives that particularly that first half that were sustaining and getting the win to snap count. They end up losing snap count by 6 again in this game, 62-56. And here's the killer Ravens stat for me. They played 7 games. They only have one game where they've had 60 offensive snaps. That's like kind of, I think of that as being kind of like a bare minimum for a team that's any offensive ability at all. Is 60 is kind of a bare minimum. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. To me, that says you're doing one of two things. You're either scoring too fast or you're moving too slow. Like, you know, if you're trying to slow down the game and kind of sit on the ball, you know, kind of wait until like a few seconds left on the play clock and then snap the ball just because you're afraid of the quarterback on the other side. And I've seen teams try to do that. I mean, Steelers historically do that with like almost every team they go against because they don't like getting shootouts. But that kind of stat tells me that you're either scoring too fast or too explosive, if that's such a thing, too explosive, or you're just trying to slow down the game.
Yeah, the too explosive kind of was a tax on the Ravens defense in week one against the Bills. They scored a bunch of touchdowns really quickly, and that really hurt the defense to a certain degree. So it meant Your 7 points on offense that you score end up giving the other team 3/4 of a point or something in terms of expected scoring on their drive. So you don't really want that to happen, but you can't argue about touchdowns either, no matter how quickly they happen. I mean, if they happen, the other team can almost automatically give one to you anytime they want. So you take them when you get them. All right, let's move on. Talk about one thing I liked in this game was the run game misdirection was at least back. Now, I know that Lamar didn't run the ball enough, and it'll be magnified, I think, more when he's back, but they at least had their weapons. They used Keaton Mitchell on the field 10 times. Not maybe as many snaps as I still like to see from him, but that's getting to a reasonable point. He got 5 touches in those 10 snaps. They used him in a pony backfield this week.
Yeah. That I love the creativity from Todd Monken. Again, just like using all the weapons at your disposal, man. I mean, there's no reason that you should have had Keaton Mitchell sitting on the sidelines or on the bench for as long as he was. But I'm glad that they're finding more ways to get him on the field. They got him that 7-yard check down. You know, unfortunately, they ended up going 3-and-out on that one drive where he caught that ball for 7 yards. But still, just having him and having that threat, like I was just so frustrated with Harbaugh when he almost got like, I won't say arrogant, but like when he first asked about Keaton Mitchell, remember earlier in the season, he was saying, oh, designer plays, defense is going to know what they're doing. I don't give a shit if you know what they're doing. Like he's fast and explosive. And every time Derrick Henry's on the field, they know what he's doing. Either he's getting the ball or it's play action. So I'm glad that they're finally kind of getting around to like, we got to get, there's no reason we shouldn't get this explosive weapon, at least the threat of this explosive weapon on the field more often, especially in conjunction with our other guys.
Yeah, I mean the best threats are credible threats. So if they know he's going to get the ball, that should be the best way. And honestly, I'd like them to have multiple elements of misdirection. And last week with Mitchell against the Bears, when they didn't have any kind of credible Jackson opportunity, you know, they ran these counters, and Mitchell was very effective running opposite of the two-man pull. So they could have been playing a hyper power game to run with Mitchell that way, but they ran the other way and just Mitchell was outrunning everybody on that side of the field.
Yeah, I was yelling like man, I'd like to see the Ravens do more to the Dolphins, like the Dolphins were doing with A-Chain in the first half of that game, really kind of attacking the edges of that defense. And because like I bet you that 34 is getting to that sideline faster than 15 or 5 or, you know, Matt Judon number 8.
Mm-hmm. We got, you know, when you look at what's ahead for the Ravens, they do need to be really careful about what their edge defense looks right now. They have not figured out any replacement for Tavius Robinson. And other teams, that's something they'll advance scout and really see as a big weakness, I think.
Yeah. Tavius Robinson, the loss of him more so than his 2 sacks was his presence on as an edge setter in the run game. I mean, they call that guy a glass eater for a reason, because that's exactly what he does on early downs. That's really how he made his mark on this team as a rookie, playing more than people thought he would because he was so good on those early downs. I mean, just thinking back to that Tyreek Hill play where he was able to set the edge and bring down Tyreek Hill of all people in the open field in that home game that they had in 2023 late in the season.
Yeah, now they've got 3 players. None of them is really a round peg. They got a bunch of square pegs for round holes here on early downs, and that's a shame. I think that's actually a harder position for the Ravens to go out and find a player who can do most of what Tavius Robinson did, because Tavius Robinson could rush the passer a little, okay? Mm-hmm. And he probably was a better pass rusher than any kind of pass rush productivity stats would show, because he wasn't getting on the field on third down the same kind of high opportunity downs that other pass rushers were getting. You get a good first down edge setter, and you get a versatile guy who can kick inside when you need him to, when you're totally short on players who can do that. Now they've got, you know, Mickey Mouse, Simpson schemes. And not that Trenton Simpson is a bad player. I think he's done some good things for the Ravens, but they're casting him in a role that doesn't really make a lot of, you know, doesn't really fit him well.
Yeah, against bigger and badder offensive lines, he'll get steamrolled and then kind of roll if he's on the field on those early downs, and they're just going to roll right over him.
Right. It's been all dime for all fairness. So they've used him only in games where he's a pass rusher, but he stands up in the middle. He's on the edge. I mean, but he's a kind of a roving pass rush role. It's not too dissimilar to Hamilton, but he's not capable of playing on the edge on an early down. So he's only a third down player, an obvious passing down player. And even on that, they haven't used him every down. Like, they have 2 versions of the dime, and they use Taven Bryan and Jones together as a tandem about half the time, and Simpson and Jones about the other half of the time. So the role for Trenton Simpson is getting narrower and narrower as time passes this season. All right, let's move forward. They had a good second half with 14 first downs. They converted their only 4th down. Always nice to see a team that can rush the ball 31 times and pass it 25, because you know you're probably winning that ball game. Mm-hmm. Not because the run was successful and got you the win. It might well have been your passes, but you ran because you were winning.
Yeah, it's a nice change from like what we saw earlier in the season, where the Ravens really couldn't run when they really needed to close out games. And now to see that they were able to do that, I mean, one of my keys to the game was like, you know, kind of break the roll with Derrick Henry late in the game. You know, if you got yourself a lead, just keep leaning on him. Because, like, yeah, they were stuffing Henry, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say left and right, but like they had a good amount of stuff, you know, at the line of scrimmage or shortly thereafter. There were times where Henry was trying to hurdle his own offensive linemen because they were, you know, getting good penetration in the trenches. But you see, as the game wore on, like we were just talking about earlier, those guys kind of like started making business decisions. Oh, this game's out of hand, man. I'm tired of running to this battering ram. And before you know it, you're picking up chunks of 35 yards, 19 yards, 13 yards, 8 yards, 7 yards. And the clock was rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, certainly was nice to see him back at that level with Lamar. And I expect him to be better, but yeah, I look at his success rate again for the season. He's up to 53%. He was in the, you know, mid to low 40s earlier in the season. And even after the big game against Buffalo, he had a fairly low success rate even in that game. It was a bunch of long runs and some stuffs in the game since then.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Now, he's up to 53% for the season. That would be, I think, about a reasonable over-under right now for what I'd hope he'd be for the entire year. He could be a little better, but it honestly would probably take a healthy Lamar to make Henry have a slightly higher success rate than he's had. And the Ravens also have had some problems opening up holes on the line of scrimmage. So they're going to have to make better use of Ricard also. I think he might have cost himself some playing time with the performance last night or on Thursday night.
Yeah. I was going to say the usage of Patrick Ricard going up could definitely help Henry. You saw that kind of take effect, especially in that fourth quarter there where there were some blocks there. But, yeah, watching him get blown up by Bradley Chubb in that pass set was definitely rough to see. But, I think he played 20 – Ricard played 21 snaps against the Dolphins, and then he played 14 against the Bears. So kind of seeing his usage kind of go up and then kind of ease him into more of a larger role is pretty good. And, I'm looking forward to see his role grow and kind of bounce back from that performance against Dolphins because it's a little rough.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, obviously, we can talk more about Ricard in the individual notes, but it looked like he got a hands to the face on that very first terrible-looking pancaking. But the second one, which was on the left side, it was just hands to the chest, knocked him right on his ass. And it was not a good looking block at all. So they had the tight ends get back in the offense, 105 receiving yards on 9 targets. That's always terrific when you can be up there in 11 plus land, 3 touchdowns among them. So we saw Charlie Kolar play his disappearing act on a really nice design play to get him free on that left side. Andrews coming through to find space on 4th and 2. And then Andrews again, finding a little space with Lamar, I believe under a little bit of pressure on that 20-yard touchdown. I have to look back and see. That was just a ball out quick the way I have it. So
as soon as Lamar saw those defenders crash into each other, he was like easy money.
Yeah.
I think a big difference when you see Lamar throwing to the tight ends as opposed to Ravens' other quarterbacks is Lamar's able to get it to them in space, in stride, with room to move. Like, that was the biggest thing about Isaiah. A lot of people are like, oh, Lackley's been back. Why isn't he? Well, his first game back was Lamar's first game going down. And ever since then, you got a bunch of quarterbacks that are throwing to him either right while his defenders are either on his back or already in his hip pocket, as opposed to Lamar is able to spend some time or just plan out, hit guys in stride. So that's why I like that Lamar Lackley combo is always more deadly when he's able to hit him in stride, and like especially on those extended plays.
Yeah, you know, that's a fantastic point. And if you look at who Lamar is as a quarterback and who Tyler Huntley is as a quarterback, you can understand exactly why that's true. I mean, you know, first of all, Huntley is not nearly as accurate as Lamar is down the field. Second of all, Huntley doesn't have any pocket awareness. So the coaches know it, and the defenses know it. And so they have to scheme the ball out of his hands more quickly. Well, that creates a more compressed field. It creates more U-turn routes for the players who are catching the football, which is more like creates those downhill tackle opportunities for linebackers and safeties and corners, any any player out there, frankly, who can make a downhill tackle in that play, as opposed to Lamar, who's not afraid to hold the ball, and then hit somebody on a crossing route where they really have an ability to make a lot of damage after the catch.
Yeah, that 35-yard hit, Isaiah Likely on, you know, they hit suck the defense up, and it's threw right over their heads.
Mm-hmm. And the throw to Flowers was great to see. Zay Flowers hasn't been anyone that anybody could cover on a crossing route this year. I've been a little bit concerned that they haven't that at some point they're going to figure out some gimmick two-man defense, some gimmick two-man combination of corner and safety to maybe stop Flowers on crossing routes. They haven't really been able to do it, but it's nice to see Lamar try and go once to him over the top like he did on the, I think it was 39-yard play or whatever.
Yeah, 39-yard, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really sweet play, and there was Yak involved there too, but he was basically a hole shot and hit it right on the money, and it was just watching the game, seeing the pass go up. My immediate thought is, oh crap, that might be intercepted. They've got two levels front and back on him, but it wasn't even close. It wasn't even close. Yeah. He caught the ball, the ball stride, and ran right down.
It was just so nice to see Lamar kind of shake off the rust as the game went on. It kind of reminds me of the, I don't know if it's like a Rocket Money commercial or some kind of commercial where like the person's like running with a bunch of like rusty metal on them. And then like raise their credit score, the metal kind of to fall off and then they feel lighter and then they're just kind of flying. And that's why I felt like the offense was, you went from kind of shaking off that rust, looking like the 10 man needing some lubrication, some oil, to just flying high, man. And I just, watching Lamar kind of do that and kind of find his rhythm and getting stride there was nice to see as the game went on.
Yeah. Bateman had a TD, was not really a big part of the offense in this game. I think it was 4 targets for 13 yards or something. I mean, it's not a good result, but maybe worse than that is the unsportsmanlike conduct flag. Cause he obviously must've said something to the referee.
That he did. Really, yeah.
Inappropriate. Yeah. Did they catch that on TV? I didn't see.
So they said on TV, like Bateman, they zoomed up, then on his face, and he was like, "Are you kidding me?" Like, cut to the ref. Okay. So he did get held on the play. Like, you know, he got a tug of the jersey, did impede him. But, like, my whole thing is, like, dude, don't let that stop you. Keep running through the route because, like, that's how you really sell it. You don't sell it by just, throwing your hands up and come on, ask for the flag. The Chiefs get those. We don't get those. Chiefs get those. We don't get those.
No, who? Somebody ran through a flag and made the catch in this game, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was a defensive holding on a. It might have been the touchdown to Bateman had a defensive holding on it by 23.
I think it was. Yeah. In the end zone.
So anyway, maybe he learned his lesson on the a little bit later. What else to say about this game? You know, one thing that I love about watching Lamar Jackson just roll the Ravens down the field is he rarely makes a significant error. It's not like he never fumbles the football, but he very rarely puts the football in harm's way. He didn't do that at all in this game in terms of making mistakes. And hey, you know, over these last two games, all of a sudden, and they haven't been the greatest of opponents, but it's a 4-0 turnover margin over two games, and that is a big change from where the Ravens were.
Yeah, when you don't turn the ball over in first turnovers, that's the recipe. One of the main recipes for success, you know. Yep. If you're not giving the other team more possessions to hurt you, you're doing a good job. While your defense is doing that, you guys are playing complimentary football. Complimentary football isn't just taking the ball away and winning the battle for field position. Part of complimentary football is not putting your defense in disadvantageous positions by giving the other team short fields. So even if they do hold them in the red zone, you're still giving up 3 points. So not doing that is great to see. It was great to see Huntley not turn over the ball. It's great to see Lamar not turn over the ball and beat the opponents that you're supposed to beat by not beating yourselves.
Yeah, they you do generate turnovers from having the lead too. And the Starks interception in particular was a turnover generated by the lead, not by the defense playing under normal circumstances. And no shade on Starks. He had a fantastic game, and that was a nice interception going up high. But it never would have happened. And Tua is highly interception conscious, despite the number he's had this year, and maybe because of the number he's had this year, he's even more worried about interceptions right now. But he put the ball out there where he just said, okay, screw it, we're taking a chance here and on making a big play down the field. And usually that's a mistake.
I thought Malachi. I had a really good feeling that Malachi Starks was going to have get his first pick in this game. But I thought it was going to be on something like, because Tua's not has doesn't have the strongest arm. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be like on like an underthrown Hail Mary to close out the second the first half. And I thought that, but before Mike Green slash David Ajabo, if you want to credit him with the sack, but before that happened, I thought that Tua was trying to crow hop that thing and was going to throw it, and Malachi Starks was going to come underneath it. I just had the feeling he was going to be down there somewhere. But to see him, like I said, get that splash play that people have been clamoring for and that he really kind of needs for his confidence second half of the season, I think is really good to see.
Yeah. All righty. Okay, what else we got to talk about? Let's move on and talk about Lamar a little bit, because lots of things, and you know, most of the ways that you chop down Lamar's play, he was pretty darn effective. The pass rush, they used primarily a 4- and 5-man pass rush, and that virtually indistinguishable Lamar's success, whether that's 7.9 yards per play with a 4-man rush, 7.8 yards per play with a 5-man rush. They didn't use 3, they didn't use 6, they did have 1 incomplete on a 7-man rush, but basically the Dolphins were fairly vanilla about what they did. They did bring some players on blitzes, but it wasn't super complex, and it was nothing like that 40-cover-0 blitz thing nightmare they put Lamar through 4 years ago. So they didn't try anything like that in the game.
Well, I mean, just look who the defensive coordinator is. Anthony Weaver knows Lamar Jackson well. He was the associate head coach for the Ravens, so he knows, like, look, this guy will pick us apart. If we try to bring more than we think they can block, he'll find the holes. He knows that. He's got an up close and personal look of Lamar Jackson. So he knows that, you know, that blind Flores. That's why I'm low-key kind of excited for the Vikings game. Next week. Yeah, because like Brian Flores can help himself, and he thinks like, oh, you know, I did this to Lamar last time we played him, and maybe I could do it again. I would advise it, but if you do it, I'm telling you, this guy, maybe first half Lamar, first half of this game might have had some trouble, but he's not rusty anymore. He's all the way back, especially from the processing level.
I hope you're right, and I hope he's more than just back as Lamar the passer, as we saw in this game, but he's as Lamar the runner. He can help be the lubricant this team needs to run the ball very effectively. And they did not run the ball effectively except with Henry in this game. The other four guys who carried the ball, nobody averaged over 2.8 yards per carry, including Lamar. But Lamar did have a couple of kneels in there.
Kneel downs,
reduce his numbers, but still. Let's talk about opportunity set now. So this is ample time and space, ball out quick and pressure. People have listened to this show for a long time. Hopefully I don't need to explain what those mean exactly, but I will very briefly. Ample time and space, 3-second pocket, and the very important second required component of that is the ability to step into your throw. If the quarterback can't step into his throw, go through the normal throwing motion. And by the way, a lot of your power when throwing comes from your legs. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a pitcher, that's the first thing you learn how to do is how to push off the rubber and how to use your legs to throw. But anyway, he had 6 ample time and space opportunities, 24%. That's low. But on those plays, 4 of 5 complete, 24 net yards, which is terrible, and 1 sack. So he had 1 ATS pocket where he eventually ended up leaving it, rolling out to the right a little bit, and he took a short sack, but only 4 yards per play with ample time and space. Kind of gives you a sense of how it doesn't always matter that Lamar Jackson gets a lot of really high quality opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, with the offensive line, that's what makes like the stark comparison between Cooper Rush, Tyler Huntley, Lamar, is that like that's why the Cooper Rush thing never really made any sense, because if you had the Cowboys of old offensive line, you know, and Cooper Rush, you know, you'd be fine. But this Ravens offensive line is flawed and inconsistent at times. For stretches, they were good in this game, but overall, like, you know, like when you have an offensive line that isn't a steady unit and a consistent blocking unit, you need somebody who kind of make them right, and that's Lamar does that better than anybody in this league.
So agree completely. The 10 ball out quicks in the game was 40% of his 25 throws. Obviously, he went 9 of 10 on those for 90 yards. That's terrific, by the way. 6.0 yards per play is the standard, gold standard for what you want to do. So he exceeded that by about 30 yards. And then he was pressured 9 times, 36%. 36% is not exceptionally high, but it's too many. 9-6 relationship between pressures allowed and ATS is too much. So you wouldn't want to have that. And when you also consider the fact that one of the ATSs went for a sack, you've got a kind of a bad situation. But with pressure, 5 of 8 for 74 net yards, 8.2 yards per play under pressure, which is the expectation is 3.5. And he had one sack allowed on that. So some good plays there, some big plays there. And, you know, overall, I mean, didn't run the Ravens out of a pressure in this game. He did run. He did scramble from the pocket, but there wasn't a case where he turned a pressure into a run as he can do, you know, frequently, you know, 1 to 2. And in the first game against the Chiefs last year, he had 7 such plays where he ran him out of a pressure for a gain.
Yeah, I definitely think, like I said, he's still shaking off the rust first game back. I really think he was trying to put an emphasis on trying to do as much damage as he could from the pocket. But as the season goes on and he feels more comfortable and confident in that hamstring, I think he's going to open up that gate a little bit more.
Yeah. Outperformed his opportunity set overall by about 45 yards, 188 net versus 143 expected. That's 1.8 yards per play above expectation. That's absolutely fantastic. It's an MVP level if you could maintain it for a whole season. It's just he's not only has outstanding passing statistics, but he's in a way his passing statistics relative to his opportunity set are even better. So if it'd be something if we had reliable data from Buffalo, which was collected in the same manner, I'll say that I can trust. I'd be really interested to see how Josh Allen has done relative to his opportunity set for the year. I do have one game of that from earlier this year, but I don't have Allen's entire season, of course. Let's see. What do we want to talk about? Lamar had a 6.2 completion yards and 8.9 intended air yards. So it's C-A-Y actually should be. And Tua, by comparison, was 4.2 completed yards and 6.5 intended yards. So he's really a small ball quarterback at this point.
Yeah, especially without Tyreek Hill in there. I mean, you could really tell that they were trying to do everything quick and underneath. Yeah, he did a good job kind of earlier in that game, kind of getting the ball out quick, kind of finding those soft spots and zones. But just you could just tell that as the Ravens were kind of getting more comfortable on defense, they were kind of squeezing on everything, and they were tackling guys right when they were getting the ball coming downhill. Like some of the things that we were talking about Tyler Huntley, as far as limited run after catch things, especially on third and longs, that's what Tua was kind of dealing with in that game.
Yeah, and that is built into Tua's game a lot, and I think there's a. There's an overriding thing with Tua, which seems to be worse than any time I've seen him play previously, but he wasn't facing a dangerous pass rush in this game. He wasn't facing a team that's going to necessarily get after the quarterback and cause him a lot of pain when they put him on the ground, et cetera, et cetera. But Tua seems to have an accelerated clock. So Huntley is my comparison is on the other side, has no clock at all. He has no idea what's going on with players around him. And, you know, it could be 3, 4, 5 seconds, and he wouldn't really know the difference, and eventually he'll get hit and sacked, extending a play. In the case of other, you know, normal quarterbacks, particularly pocket quarterbacks, they have a really good sense of where they are during the play, and they get rid of it on time. They have to be a little bit conscious of it because the longer they go, that the results tend to be worse. That's not the case with a Lamar Jackson, who's an extremely mobile quarterback, but it is the case with a lot of guys who are pocket passers. And then Tua, he's not a threat as a runner at this point in his career. Tua has a speeded up clock. He gets, as time moves on, he gets antsier and antsier and antsier, and the ball comes out crazy inaccurate. And we, you know, we saw a lot of that in this game of these
throws. A lot of sprays.
They're behind the passer, the fourth down and 2 throw. I mean, I'd have been pissed off if I were a Dolphins fan. It was, you know, it was excellent coverage by Hamilton, but he needed to find a different target or risk the interception, one or the other. You don't throw the ball away on 4th and 2 into the end zone or, you know, out of the side of the end zone here. It didn't make any sense. So bad game.
Yeah, I mean, play call aside, Devon Achane could have been a foot taller, and he's still not probably coming down with that ball. I mean, it was airmailed out the back of the end zone, and it's just like I never understand why I like some quarterbacks do that. Like especially like 4th and 1, 4th and 2, yeah. any 4th down, like you're better off throwing it into a crowd and hoping your guy comes down with it than throwing it out of the back of the end zone where nobody had the chance, and now it's a turnover on downs.
Completely agree. I mean, the quarterbacks today are so conditioned against interceptions that they don't even do it on 4th down. And it's a funny story I remember about this, and people have heard me say this before, but I'll risk the story again because I just love telling it. John Gruden was the broadcaster for a game where I think it was Brady Quinn was the quarterback for the Browns. Browns were losing 16-0 late to the Ravens in that game. So 16-0 was the final score too. And they had the ball, and on consecutive plays, Quinn threw the ball out of bounds on a deep sideline route. And Gruden said, you know, I know interceptions are important, but the ball's got to land in the field of play. You know, kind of thing. It's just like,
Honestly, really ragged on him.
That was good. Anyway, Tua, 2.26 time to throw. So there's a guy who that's not even healthy to have the ball out of your hands that quickly. I mean, there's a lot of routes that just can't develop in that amount of time, obviously. But even as an average, it's not healthy anyway.
Yeah, I've seen better stuff in 7-on-7s.
Lamar's completion percentage, by the way, 7.5 points above expectation. That's in previous years. That's been a stat that Next Gen keeps that he never seems to do particularly well in. Like if you believe Next Gen, his receivers are all getting tons of separation and he should be hitting a lot more, a much higher percentage of his throws. But part of that is Lamar creates expected completion percentage by the fact that he moves around and creates separation for his receivers by that method.
Yeah. I mean, they really are the biggest benefactors of his ability to extend plays, and it's a beautiful thing. And the longer that the people have, these targets have time on task with him, like you see his connection with Likely has grown every year. Even his connection with Bateman kind of improved light years just last year. And so like the more time on task he has with somebody, the better their connection is going to be, and the more likely they are to benefit from that extended playability.
Let's talk about some other scheme elements. The running back snap division is something we kind of take a look at on this show every week. But Henry was on the field for 36 plays. By the way, he had a touch of some sort on 20 of 36 snaps. Be careful, touch or a target. I don't know if they threw an incomplete pass his way. Hill had 11. Mitchell had 10. Ali had a 0. There's two players that probably moved in the direction everybody wanted, and that's Henry and Mitchell getting a higher percentage of total running back snaps, and Hill and Ali getting a lower percentage. Ali got none. It's not really lower than what he's had recently. He's been, you know, kind of 1 or 0 for a lot of games this year. But Hill getting 11, I mean, there were people who said, we don't want Mitchell taking away Henry's snaps, you know, with that kind of a tone to their voice about what's going on. But this is exactly what you'd hope would happen, is that Mitchell would be in there for some of the snaps that Hill's in there. Obviously, not a good pass blocker, not a guy who will bring you a lot there, and Hill's valuable to the Ravens in that respect. But still, he's such a dangerous player, run or pass. You really need to have him on the field.
Yeah. I'm totally fine with Justice Hill being our, you know, 2-minute offense guy, third and long, obvious pass situations kind of dude. Great, still great on screens, but there's no reason that Keaton Mitchell shouldn't be on the field. I mean, if it's up to me, man, I'm up here in freaking Alaska. The dude would get a minimum of like 12 touches a game. That doesn't, whether that's a variation between carries and screens kind of thing. I just that guy needs the ball in his hands more often, and to see him on the field more often, more and more is encouraging.
The rule of two would be in play here. If he gets 12 touches, he's going to have about 24 snaps. That seems high to me, but I want more touches, and I want him more on the field, not touching the ball, also and misdirecting, forcing linebackers and other players to be committed to his motion. So I. Love to see more pony. By the way, we did see a pony backfield in this game, and it wasn't what you'd expect with kind of Mitchell and Henry. It was Mitchell and Hill together.
Yeah.
A little bit weird. All right. Ravens used 1.93 heavies per play, something we look at every week. That was up from the Bears game where they were at 181, down from the season high against the Rams where they were at 208. But they're really playing much heavier football. That game against the Chiefs, they were under one heavy per play. They've had, even against a team like the Dolphins in this game, who had a lot of problems in the secondary of what was going on. They have multiple sets of injury problems, but they did have some pass rushers. They went after the corners, I'd say, more than they had in other games, and really made up for it with some set and chip blocking assignments to give up some eligible receivers to try and protect against those edge rushers.
Yeah, I mean, when you have guys and who he can throw through that can get create separation on their own and real natural, like Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman, you can almost afford to have less guys out in the route just because you can trust those other guys to get open and Lamar to extend plays.
Yeah. All right, 14 set four chip blocks in this game. The 0.72 per passer sack is approximately normal. The Dolphins used a pretty darn normal 4.5 rushers per play. So they weren't going heavy on numbers. Nothing was working any better than anything else. I don't blame them for the strategy. It's just they did what they did. And you know, this was a team that had better opposing edge quality. So they had Jalen Phillips. They had Bradley Chubb. They had Chop Robinson to start the game. They didn't have him to finish the game. So he left with a concussion. And, you know, they got some guys who could rush the passer from the outside. They just don't have a whole lot on the inside in terms of really dangerous player. Zach Sealer, by the way, Dolphins MVP last year. Seventh round draft pick for the Ravens in 2018. Mm-hmm. They had to let him go when they thought they could sneak him through to the practice squad at I think it was in the 20 season or might have been in the 19 season. And then I think it was the 19 season because immediately he went to the Dolphins. Yeah, and then he was really good for them that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's you know come on to be – he was actually the first player the Ravens drafted in 2018 that got a second contract. And he got it with the Dolphins. It was a big money deal, and he has completely lived up to his value there in Miami.
Yeah, yeah. Pete, I know some Ravens fans were asking if they could get him back the trade deadline. It's not happening. I mean, I think they're willing to part with every other player in that defense besides him and maybe Jordan Brooks.
Jordan Brooks, I wouldn't want. He looks terrible to me right now. But
they love him. They live in Miami, so I think that the hot thought Ian Rappaport saying everybody like, they're selling everything that isn't nailed down there except for Zach Sealer. He's nailed down.
All right. Well, that makes sense, and it might also be very difficult for them to move Sealer given the contract he has. I really don't know, but since he signed long term, that's always a possibility that you might have that problem. I'm sure we'll look at that when we do the trade shows. I'm talking to McFarland and Voss each separately about what might happen at the trade deadline coming up over the next 2 days. Let's talk about I guess we'll cut it off here for the first part of the show. Josh, really appreciate having you back on. Tell us a little bit about your life and how people can reach you if they want to talk football with you.
Oh, well, I'm a full-time sports reporter up here in Anchorage, Alaska, covering everything and all thing Alaska sports. And I also write about the Ravens for Ravens on SI. So that's where you can find all my Ravens content. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, I'm at JoshReed907.
You've bopped around a little bit in terms of sites for the Ravens. You were on Heavy at one point and RSR and
I wasn't on RSR. So I started off with Maryland Sports Blog, then – Baltimore Beatdown, then Heavy, then back to Beatdown, and then now I'm with Ravens on SI. So I really had a great time at Beatdown. Like it's almost like you know my home away from home when it comes to my writing. I love all the guys over there. Nikhil's in charge over there now. Real appreciative to Kyle and all those guys, and so like love the camaraderie over there. But I'm having a good time over here at Ravens on SI.
Good people for sure.
Real good to me.
All right, and if they want to reach you online, you're at JoshReed907, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, the O is zero, but when you're from Alaska, you always say 907.
Yeah, okay, so 907 area code, that's what we're talking about there. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. As always, really appreciate the loyal listenership. And it's been a tough season, but the sun seems to be rising here. There's a little crack of light on the horizon, and we are hopeful again that this is going to be a run the Ravens can maintain, and hope you'll stay with us and enjoy the second half of the season. Please, if you want to do one thing for us, you can write a 5-star 50-word review on your favorite podcast platform. That's always valued. You can do tell one new person how to find the material here, whether it's the articles or the podcast. I'd really appreciate that. And, we can do some algorithmic stuff, but I'm not very good at that, frankly. And I'm hoping for word of mouth to be more of a driver in terms of how this podcast gets out there. Josh, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.